Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. We are rethinking how we build customer relationships. And as you know, we feature incredible guests every single week who are really changing that paradigm. Today is no exception. I'm so excited to welcome to the show, Mary. Mary, we're so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So, you know, we open with the same question every time and it never gets old because I'm always surprised by what people have to say to this question. So tell me, Mary, what is your hot take?
So I think I'm going to surprise you, right? It's not going to be your typical answer of how you build revenue and grow very quickly and like do all the things, right? And it's a cliche keyword or buzzword, but culture, right? And treating your people like people. I've always been a firm believer that if you treat your people well, they'll treat your company well, they'll treat your customers well, and it's got a complete domino effect. And then everybody wins, right? So not your standard hot take of a certain process to do, but how important culture is, basically.
You just picked a topic very near and dear to my heart. So I already know this is going to be a great conversation. I joined a startup right out of college, right?
Okay.
So I was in like a group of people who we were all there for the same thing. There was only like three of us. So we all knew each other incredibly well. Then eventually we got acquired and it was just a different, not bad environment, but it was just a different environment. We were all over the country. We were remote. We were bigger. And one of the things that always drove me crazy and about one of the people who worked there, he would always refer to people as resources. He would say, well, Alyssa, that's your resource. So you need to use her how you see fit. And I'm sitting there going like, I don't like that word. It just gives me the ick, right? It was the mindset around that's your resource rather than, hey, that's your team member and she can contribute.
Yeah. And I think from what you're saying, it also feels like the tone of that. It wasn't in a positive light because a resource could be a really positive thing too, right? It was probably the way they sent it to you too that gave you the ick because it gave me the ick when you sent it to me.
Right. And it's one of those things where probably not ill-intentioned, right? It's not like he was, you know, trying to dehumanize her in that moment. But the mindset that we are cogs in a machine and not individual, incredible people who can build something wonderful. I mean, how many times do we see that in companies, whether it's the smallest startup of three people all the way to the largest conglomerate, you know, companies out there?
Yeah, it's so true. And I wonder, too, with the person that you're talking about, are there generational differences there?
Yeah, definitely a generational jump. I think he's a boomer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I find that so fascinating. So I also find generational differences super insightful and helpful in this, right? What I learned, I've been in the game for a while, right? Dealt with lots of different people over many generations. But what I've learned is the majority of people want to do the right thing, right? And sometimes they just need a different perspective and they have different beliefs, right? And things like that. And where like somebody who, for example, is like a boomer, they've got like this big loyalty for companies they work for, they'll do anything for them. So they can have a really hard time understanding why you just won't do what you're told, right? As a millennial or Gen Z, like, why are you challenging the status quo? That this is what you're supposed to do. So I always find that aspect of it fascinating too.
I want to go back to one of the original reasons that I reached out to you to join the podcast was a post that you wrote about career red flags. And specifically the thing that jumped out at me was when you build for the 5% instead of building for the 95%. So tell me more about that mindset.
Yeah, so I think a lot of times out there, what triggers us to create a policy or a guideline for something or a program, whatever you want to call it, is because something went wrong, right? Or it's not going the way we need it to. Say there's an employee that abused something, right? So say you've got this sales process and somebody did something wrong. So now you're going to implement that they've got to reach out to somebody for very specific approval for that thing. But why have you implemented that approval that's necessary? Because one person screwed up, right? So why are we building a whole policy and guideline to that one person when everyone else is getting it right? And Alyssa, what's that do for everybody else when that happens?
Makes you crazy and need to move on.
You're like, I'm doing my job the way I'm supposed to. So why do I need to ask X, Y, and Z, this person, for approval every single time I do this one thing, right? And it reminds me of a specific situation, a company I worked with long ago. I used to work in call center environments. And one of the things was, is if a customer called, to disconnect, right? You should never let them disconnect, right? So there came a time that we were starting to see more disconnections and more people requesting them. And what changed is the senior leadership said, you know what we need to do is get approval for any time a customer disconnects. And listen, if a customer disconnects, you didn't get approval, you could be terminated for it. That killed the culture immediately, right? There's no trust. There's no autonomy to do what you need to do, right? Again, people want to do the right thing. So implementing that very strict procedure about termination potentially because a couple people didn't do the right thing is not the right way to handle a situation, right? We need to work with those individuals that have the opportunity, hold them accountable, right? And that requires work on our side. You know, PIPs, I always say, performance improvement plans get such a bad rap. But let's be honest, everybody should be on a PIP. Everybody should be having conversations all the time about what they can do better or what they need to focus on. And also as their manager, what we need to focus on to help support them best. So all these things have this bad stigma or these changes of being implemented that shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't be implementing policies just based on somebody doing one thing wrong.
I think also it's not just about like people doing something wrong. How many times have you seen, you know, a policy gets implemented because one person who has the highest salary in the company has decided they want this one thing to happen? I was consulting with a pretty large organization, and we were going through their sales process and kind of evaluating that flow and their different steps in their workflow. And there was this one field in their Salesforce that they would always just like put fake data in because it was a required field and they couldn't go further, but they didn't have the information yet. So they had to like fake it. And I said, why do we even have this field? He said, well, so-and-so, VP so-and-so wants to run reports on it. So therefore it's a required field. And yet it's fake data. So therefore you're not really getting the report you wanted, right? So how do we protect from, you know, a culture where the highest paid person in the room gets to determine what the workflow is, even if it's not rooted in reality?
I think that's where collaboration comes in key, right? The most toxic companies I've seen are those that don't ask their employees their opinion. Listen, none of this is revolutionary. Your employees have the answers. And you know what? Every time their answer isn't going to be the right one, but you need to come to terms with that together, right? I once had a situation where I had a bunch of employees that came to my office and they're like, we want to do summer Fridays, right? We want every Friday off. And I'm like, I know the answer to that. I know it's not going to work, right? Because we need to support our customers. But you know what? Sometimes we each need to have our own learning experiences. So the collaboration on that was me going to them and saying, you know what? I'm down for it, but I need you to show me how we're going to support our customers. So you bring it back, come up with like a whole plan, bring it to me, and we'll see if we can make it happen. We'll trial it and see if it works. So after a while, they come back to me and they're like, we came up with this perfect plan, but they tried to go to their peers about the scheduling of that plan, and it was a disaster. They couldn't get anyone to agree on anything. No one wanted this schedule or that schedule, and they were so frustrated, and they were like, we're done. But that was them coming to terms with that versus me shutting them down from the second they walked in my door, right? And it's so important that we have those personal learnings. And it gave them a little empathy for me as a leader, because then they're like, wow, you do have a tough job. It's not just as easy as telling people what to do. It's you have to like think about all of these dynamics and situations, right? So that's where I think the collaboration is important, even if you're not going with their solution. And worst case scenario or best case scenario in this situation with what you said with the reporting, the top leader needs to understand that that data is not even relevant for what they're looking for. It's not giving them or painting the picture that they want it to. So they need to understand what it's used for, you know?
Right. Right. If you have useless data and you're putting in, you know, garbage data anyway, right, then your report that you're mandating actually doesn't tell you anything. It's just a waste mm-hmm. of everybody's time, including yours.
Yeah. And how silly is that leader going to look at a board meeting when the data doesn't make any sense? Like, this is just to help them, too, at the end of the day.
Right. And I think if everyone comes in, like you said, I think most people have the best intentions, right? We don't all go into work saying, you know what, I really just want to screw over my colleagues mm-hmm. and my employees and my company, right? We don't have that as a default. I think mm-hmm. generally people... I guess I'm going to generalize here. Generally, people want to do good work. They want to be mm-hmm. recognized for that good work. They want to be compensated for that good work, but they want it to be good work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They want to give their best and they want that transparency in relationship, right? And somebody to be reasonable, right? What's reasonable, what's not, in what you're asking. And listen, that's where I see Gen Z, and I love every second of it. I always say, as a millennial, like, we did a good job of starting to challenge things, right? And pushing back a little bit, and I'd question things, but Gen Z is just not taking it, right? Wait, you want me to do all these extra responsibilities, but you're not going to pay me anything? I've got some boundaries, and good for you. You should have boundaries, right? That doesn't mean you're not going to look to further your career or take on additional work, but it's fair for you to have boundaries and to be on the same page as your team and your leader to know what the next steps are and what that looks like. Because so many of us through our careers have had instances where, you know, you were misled or you felt like you were misled because you're putting in all this work and it didn't result into extra compensation or promotions and things like that. So good for Gen Z for being really good at communication and making sure that, you know, those boundaries are strong and their personal health is a top priority.
So let's flip to, you know, that customer relationship. I'm a big believer that happy employees means happy customers. Happy customers means great market perception, and great market perception means you're winning the day. And so have you seen that work, and do we have any tangible proof that this is a real thing and not just something that we tell ourselves to make ourselves feel good?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of proof in like your overall like NPS score, CSAT score, is just what customers say, you know, in their verbatims with you and how they value you as a business partner. And I'll give you an example of that. So, you know, currently in my role, I lead CX here at Compt, and we meet with our customers for quarterly business reviews, just like a lot of companies do, right, to try to provide value. And when they see you as a true partner, because you feel autonomy in your role and you feel like you have control, that's where you see the proof in the pudding in the feedback they give, that they know we've got their best interests in mind. They know that we're implementing features that they care about and things like that. Like, all that proof is in the pudding with what they say and the way they score you and your overall retention, right? And them staying with you, because customer support is the differentiator out there these days, right? Especially with AI. There's software for everything out there. What's going to make the difference is the people behind that and how dedicated they feel to their role and really their purpose in their role and the meaning of their work. And the way you get there is culture and treating your employees well.
What do you think customer-facing leaders are missing right now?
So customer-facing leaders, and listen, I've been there myself, have too much on their plate, right? Too many plates spinning, trying to balance all the things. So it can be very, very challenging to try to dedicate time to anything proactively because you're just putting fires out all the time. But that's the only way you make this better, right? Is you need to start doing very intentional things that take time out of your day to plan and not be reactive in order to make that difference, right? So like, I think about things like, I actually, before I met with you, had a Zoom out with one of my employees. So once a quarter, I meet with them for an hour and we just talk about their growth. We don't talk about the day-to-day stuff. This is a dedicated conversation every quarter to talk about very specific topics and moving them forward, not only, you know, within our company, but just overall in their careers. And do I have an extra hour of my day to do that? Not necessarily. I've got a ton of other stuff to do. But the return on investment, so to say, of that conversation in one, figuring out where we've got opportunities, I've got feedback as their leader, figuring out how to move the needle on some of their progress. Because listen, we all don't want to nitpick either, like every day about what someone's doing. And you can collectively have those conversations quarterly about trends you see, and then they can make changes, right? Or you recognize those things and say like, hey, I really noticed you've gotten really good at these things. So taking that step back to be able to reflect is something I think a lot of leaders miss on. And it's not because they don't want to. It's just because they don't have the time. So it's that mindset shift of like, let me put in this money on the front end so that I can reap the benefits as time goes on, because it's going to save me money or time in the long run.
I agree 100% on the reactivity. And I want to call back to a word that you used, which was intentionality and being intentional. It feels like I don't know about you, but my to-do list is longer than my capability to do it. And I feel like I'm really having to make hard choices about what matters now, what matters later, and what matters never. And actively choosing not to do something is sometimes harder than trying to get the whole list done.
100%. I had a great leader once say that to me, drop that bomb that you just did, that it's sometimes harder to say what not to do than what to do, right? And it's so true because you want to get it all done. It's all relevant, but prioritizing is so important, right? And really being able to identify what's going to move the needle, especially as a leader, right? What's going to move the needle with your team? Because maybe I could spend an hour doing this other thing, but if it's not going to pay off in the long run, maybe I could do it another time, right? And that's where you've also got to be in alignment with your leadership of, I think my priorities are X, Y, and Z, but are those your priorities? Do you think I should be working on these in the same order that I'm thinking? That alignment is important. And it's funny, I just had this conversation with my boss. I was like, hey, I feel like my list is getting really heavy right now on our one-on-one. I want to chat through to just make sure I'm on the same page as you as to which of these should take priority. And that open communication is the biggest difference because there's no reason why you should stress about it. You can only do what you can do. But you've just got to have open communication. It's not a weakness, right, to not be able to get anything done. And I feel like throughout our career, some of us were trained otherwise, that it is a weakness if you can't do it at all.
Absolutely. As a firstborn daughter millennial, I feel all the pressure to do all the things all the time perfectly. And how dare I ask anyone to take anything off my plate so I can relate to it.
I'm glad you relate to the hyper-independence toxic trait. I am also a firstborn daughter. That's a millennial. So sounds like we share that.
Yes. I also want to call out the comment you made about having the Zoom call. So I'm fully remote, right? Like I work from my home office. Mm-hmm. My team is stretched across the world. And yeah. Before that, before COVID, I was an in-office, you know, we were at a startup, 5 people, but I was in an office for 10 years. And then all of a sudden COVID happened and everything changed. And I feel like I have to work twice as hard as a remote leader in a remote first world to build relationships with my team members. Like before COVID, I knew who had a sand volleyball tournament that weekend and what their dog's name was and if their kid was sick because we had, you know, a 4-year-old in our conference room watching Bluey. So how do you build relationships when you might never meet this person in person?
You know what's so funny about this is I worked on site at so many different places like you, millennial, right? Done that for years. Uncompt is the first fully remote company I've ever worked in. This is the most connected I've ever been to any other team, which sounds mind-blowing, right? And that's why I'm so passionate about this push to return to an office because it doesn't make sense to me, right? It's one of those like, make it make sense to me. In some cases, of course, you need to be in an office, you need to be together. But if you're just saying to be able to collaborate, like we've all heard that term before, right? It doesn't make sense, right? So this is where we go back to what we were talking about before, being intentional. What I love about our company is our CEO, Amy Sperling, is very intentional in the things she does too. So we have a monthly all-hands meeting. The whole company is on that. We also do very specific things to bring us together. We do offsites a couple times a year. So we get together. And listen, these aren't offsites like, oh, I've got to go see my coworkers. This is like, oh my God, I'm so excited to go see the people I get to connect with and work so closely with every day. But we also do things like Mondays. We have a chit-chat call, right? Where the whole team just gets on and we talk about the weekend. A team member recently made a suggestion that was kind of funny and cool is on Mondays now we all upload to our Slack channel one image of our weekend. We don't write anything with it, just an image of whatever we want. And it is so fun to like look at those and then go on the call and talk about them because, you know, that gives you that connection piece just naturally and allows people to share parts of their life that maybe we wouldn't otherwise know. We have Wednesday game afternoon. If anybody that wants to jump on it in Wednesday afternoons for a half hour where we play a game together, my team, go figure, CX, we like to yap a lot, right? So we've had to put together our own personal CX chit-chat call. So every Friday afternoon, we just get on and talk about anything we want. But I will tell you at a personal level and business level, I've never been so connected to a group. And that's because of the culture of being, feeling like you could be yourself, right? Your authentic self, and people accept you for that, right? And I could share personal things with these guys, and we can give each other grace when we're going through things. Doesn't mean I'm not holding them accountable, but I can say, you know what? I know X is going through this right now. You know, we're going to keep that in the back of our mind, help them out. While still holding them accountable, right? It doesn't need to be this black and white thing where I was always led to believe through my career, like, hey, you got to keep these two things separate. Personal life and work life, you do not let them intertwine. But take a step back and think about that. Like, first, some big things happen in people's personal lives. How can you leave that at the door? That's impossible, right? Have you ever run into that, Alyssa?
100%. Like I said, I worked with people who were in an office. I knew everything about them. And, you know, there's so much happening in our lives that, especially in a role where you're talking with customers and you're forced to be creative sometimes and be clever and be thoughtful and strategic and all of those things that we want to be. But if all your emotional energy is stuck in your 5 to 9 instead of your 9 to 5, then how can you possibly expect yourself to show up the next day? I want to call back to your picture comment, by the way, when you said to upload the Slack picture. That would honestly be such a like competition to me to be like, I'm gonna have the best weekend ever so I can have the best picture. Like, I'm gonna do something so cool every weekend.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway, that's the first daughter millennial in me.
Yeah, I'm one upping everybody. My last week picture, it was hilarious. My two of my kids played t-ball, and it was a bunch of 4-year-olds sitting on a baseball field picking flowers instead of outfielding like they're supposed to, but like things like that, right?
So I have a picture of my son standing on third base when he was like 5 years old, and he's trying to build a sandcastle in the sand, and I'm like, buddy, that's not how that works. But also, like, you're playing baseball right now. Stop.
Oh my god, chill out. How much are you, I'm curious on your side. I'm a mom of 3 kids. It sounds like, do you just have one? You have a son?
I have 2. I have a son, okay, and a daughter, 10 and 6.
Oh. So how much of your work and personal life collide from like just the learnings on the parenting side and how that applies to work in the workplace? Like, do you find that synergy like I do?
I do. I have a semi-weekly newsletter that I post called Taking Back Monday. And it's this idea that work doesn't have to be shitty and we can like what we do. And my kids are often the feature characters in these stories. I have one coming out next week about my 6-year-old daughter who wanted to help me cook spaghetti. And so she's never cooked spaghetti before. So I got the water boiling and I was working with her, and I said, okay, I handed her a fistful of spaghetti noodles and I said, okay, throw those in the water. And she took me literally. She threw them. And
well, did tell her to throw them.
That was exactly my takeaway. So like they went all over the stove, and I think maybe like 25% got into the water, and I started laughing. And then meanwhile, she's like in tears because in her mind, she ruined it. She screwed up. And even though in my mind, I'm going, oh my God, what an idiot, Alyssa, you told her to throw it in. She took you literally. She's a child. Of course, she's never done this before. So it was one of those. I get all my leadership lessons from my kids because I then had the immediate thought of like, how many times as leaders do we tell people to throw the noodles in instead of saying what we actually mean, which is gently place the noodles in the boiling water? And how many times do they blame themselves for their failures when really it's me as a leader who screwed up?
100%. It's lack of communication or not communicating effectively.
Exactly.
And one of my biggest lessons, I love that one. One of my biggest lessons for the hyper independence that we both seem to share was, I'll never forget, a few years ago, my son was learning how to tie his shoes, right? And oh my God, it's the most painful experience, right? How long that takes to tie, and you're like losing your mind. And I'm like, buddy, just let me help you. Hyper independent thing right there. Just keeps on doing it. So anyway, I let it continue, and I'm just pleading with him to let me help him. And then it like sunk in for me. I'm like, I genuinely want to help him. Like, I desire to help him, but he won't let me. And I'm like, oh my God, this is karma coming back full circle. I know there are people in my life that want to help me too, like just genuinely want to help me. I'm not a burden to them. I'm not inconveniencing them. They would find joy in helping me, and I just won't let them do it. And I'm like, but why? That's stupid, right? Like, so like you said, parenting has like been the biggest eye opener for this. And then also, why is that second born child always just like yourself? And karma comes back full circle. with those traits.
I see a lot of things in the mirror of my 6-year-old that I'm like, oh man. So yes, it's my firstborn is, he's a lot like me in a lot of ways, but he's not the intense part of me. My daughter is the intense.
Me too.
Intense part of me. So she, I tell people she's either going to be the head of her prison gang or the CEO of her company, and there will be no in between.
We have the same daughter, it sounds like, because I tell people that my daughter's either going to be a CEO of a company or lead a drug cartel.
Yes,
and I'm
exactly.
hoping that she just, that we're going to work to keep her on the right path. So I joke with my CEO all the time. I'm like, I'm going to need your help. Like, we're going to have to keep her on track. One day she would, it's locked her bedroom door. And I was like, hey, you need to let me in. And I said, I'm going to take this door off the hinges if you don't unlock it. And she said, just do it then.
Yes. I was okay. Like, we have the same child.
What do I even say in that? Right.
She's got to walk away. Otherwise she wins.
She always wins. It's fine. She's the boss of the house. But yeah, it's wild. It's fun. It's made me a better leader though, becoming a parent for sure.
I agree. Mary, considering all of the incredible people that you work with, have had a chance to meet or just follow online, who else should we be talking to? Who is leading the charge and helping us rethink customer relationships?
I think Amy Sperling. So it's going to be kind of cheesy, right? Because she's my CEO of Com. But when you asked me that question, she was the first person to come to mind. One, because CEOs always take the rap for things, right? Senior leaders don't get credit or recognized, right? Because they're worried about everybody else on their team. But she has done such an amazing job of building a culture at a company here at Compt that is unique to anything I've ever seen in my entire career. Like I said, it's super intentional. She's one of those people that keep it real with you, is transparent, understands things. And she's just somebody you want to keep your eye on and follow, because she's just, you know, when you just know good people, she's one of those people that's leading the charge, but a great person at the same time. So it's great to see the culture she's built here.
I love that. And I do want to say, I think good leaders never get the recognition they deserve because they are always focused on other people. We always all have that leader that's like, everyone pay attention to me. I'm the big boss. I'm on the stage. I do the keynotes. I'm incredible. But I think the best leaders are focused on everyone else around them first. So it sounds like Amy fits that mold.
She absolutely does.
So Mary, if someone is really connecting with you, if they want to learn more, if they want to talk about their feral second child, where can they find you online?
Yeah, they can find me on LinkedIn. You'll actually see I'm pretty active. I do a lot of posts. That's how you found me. But I found it to be incredibly therapeutic to post about how parenting and leadership join together, and also just good cultures. I'm super passionate about being here at Compt has taught me that it is possible to have that great culture that we hear about. And it's just about doing some very particular and intentional things to make it happen.
Awesome. Thank you, Mary, for joining me on the Growth Signal.
Thanks. It was great to chat with you.